Hello and welcome to Ruthie, Uni, Dad and Me. You're back at university now.
I'm back.
Yes, you're back.
And better than ever.
Yes, good. And I gather that your friends are listening to our podcast.
No, there's a couple of them, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's great.
But I hate that. I've told them not to.
Told them not to?
Because, you know, it's a bit embarrassing.
Well, that's going to be more embarrassing now. So, but they are listening. But they find our jingle slightly annoying.
This was just one person who said they found the jingle. I think they found it, like, just awful.
Mm.
Little sting, yeah.
Yeah, but the rest of it they like.
They like me. They're not so keen on you.
Well, I would expect that, you know, because you're their generation. Did you make any New Year's resolutions at all? Have you kept them?
Did I make New Year's... What New Year's resolutions? I did make a lot. I want to do this... I thought I could make New Year's resolutions, like, to be kinder or to lose weight or whatever, but chances of me doing that is slim to none. So... My New Year's resolutions were, there's an app called 1 Second Every Day where you film a second of your day every day.
You film a second
of
your day, yeah.
And then it compiles them all together in like a little video. And so I've been doing that and I genuinely have been keeping up with it. I've only been doing it for 15 days, but still.
Mm.
And then my other one was...
Does that help the world in any way or is that just for
you? No, it was just for me. I mean, help the world resolutions are kind of silly anyway, aren't they? Like... I think to be more sustainable would be one and all those things, but I thought I'll just do one that's actually tangible.
Mm. You've done 15 days of this, a second every day. So at the moment you've got a 15-second video, have you, on your phone, and eventually at the end of the year you'll have a...
Yeah, 365-second video.
Or 5 minutes.
6 minutes, 5 seconds.
Good, well, I look forward to seeing that.
It's actually pretty dull because it's a lot of, like, us in the kitchen before a night out, or... Mm.
But you burnt your hand in the kitchen.
Yeah, I burnt my hand in the kitchen.
Yeah, and you burnt your hand because of somebody else's...
Tomfoolery.
Tomfoolery.
Unless it just dropped out. Like, the oven is pretty crap. One of the trays broke because it's a student kitchen and everything's always everywhere.
So you've not made a resolution about fast fashion because...
I think that would be one. It should be one.
Somebody called Lauren Bravo wrote a piece in The Observer saying that she's doing it. She says it's been the great love of her life, but for Lauren Bravo, the time has come to break up with fast fashion. She's actually a fashion writer and she's decided that's the best thing you should do. She says, I can't remember a new year when I haven't made a resolution. Get more sleep, drink more water, drink less booze, eat more fruit, learn Spanish. Well, there you go.
It's good that a lot of people's resolution is always to, like, take French classes or learn Spanish or whatever, and I can actually say I'm doing that.
You're doing that. She says, but this year I broke up with fast fashion. No more casual flirtation with one of the most exploitative and wasteful industries on the planet. Goodbye, my problematic friend. Over the years, clothes have been my comfort blanket and confidence boost. They've been a recreational hobby, a competitive sport, and a way to bond with people in pub toilets. I've hunted for those holy grail garments the way a hardcore collector might hunt out rare stamps or action figures, etc, etc.
The thing is, though, I can really relate to this because I always think, oh, I should be more sustainable, I shouldn't be buying fast fashion and blah, 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 just like she says. But there is a kind of thing where it's like, it should be companies who are held up to a standard because realistically, when we're thinking about climate change...
If you're start as individuals, companies will then have to change their ways, won't they?
I get that, like, which comes first or whatever. But it's also such, like, a key part of, like, identity and stuff. And, like, sustainable fashion is much more expensive unless you go into, like, charity shops, and then it's very difficult to find things often. It is, when you make new stuff sustainably, it is so expensive that it's just kind of...
Well, I'll tell you...
It's kind of unfair to be asking people to shop sustainably, but then...
Well, I'll tell you how can you do it. I want to give you a 5-step way to do it.
Yeah, go on then.
Number one, detox your inbox. Unsubscribe from every brand email that might lead you into temptation. Number two, follow the leader, scroll slow fashion influencers, such as at Uncomplicated Spaces. Number three, know your triggers. Think about the reasons you buy clothes you don't need and how you could change those behaviours. Number four, have a dress-up session. Get out everything you own. Marvel at how many clothes you already have. I mean, that's the thing with everybody. We've all got loads of clothes we don't wear.
And you know what? Genuinely, I wear almost all my clothes. I really do not have that many. I have a lot of clothes, but I do pretty much wear them.
Oh, that's all right then. 5, become a borrower. When the urge to shop strikes, try raiding someone else's wardrobe.
Yeah, this is something that we do at uni a lot, because obviously, actually, at home with my friends, I would always bring, like, a massive bag of clothes, because I have a lot of, like, night out type clothes, especially. That's one of the problems, is that when you've worn something on the night out, there's a bit of like a thing about, oh, you're gonna wear that again or whatever, you know, stupid.
Can
like
you not
girl
wear it
stuff
again, so like,
yeah but if there's like to... if it's a very distinctive thing or whatever. I wear stuff a lot more often on nights out now because I go on a lot more because I'm at uni, and especially if you're feeling really like low in confidence, like, oh, I just look fat and everything, I'm awful or whatever, sometimes if someone else brings you something, then you can feel very like, oh, this is really nice, because it's just something fresh that doesn't feel like you've done it. So I do think that's one of the best tips.
Mm. So that's a tip, but it's not a New Year's resolution. You're going to stick to more or less the same thing as regards fast
fashion. Why change a winning formula? Well, no, I am going to try. I've not bought any fast fashion yet. It's 15th of January. Depop is really good if people are looking for a way to shop more sustainably.
Yes, we mentioned Depop before.
Yeah, Depop's great.
We used to start with a lame one-line joke.
We didn't start with anything this week. We were
straight into it.
Yeah.
It's because I'm so excited to see you.
Time is money.
I haven't seen you for it. Your time is money. That's true. Is this what they teach you at York University? Mm. Time is money.
Lesson one: time is money.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. But we used to start with a lame joke, and I'm just a bit worried that your university friends, who are now listening to us, would be waiting.
Stop saying that.
Would be waiting for the lame joke. So I met the guy who invented crossword puzzles.
Did you?
Yeah. I don't know his name. It's P something T something.
That was bad.
I mean, I did say lame, and
yeah,
it did what it said on the tin, didn't it, really?
Mm.
So, back at uni, what's on your mind?
What's on my mind? Nothing. It's literally, it's just one of those little monkeys with symbols all the time.
Like in The Simpsons.
Mm. That's all. Just that over and over again. No, what's on my mind? So, second term of uni feels, I don't know, it took like, I thought that I would feel really like settled absolutely instantly, but actually it did take like a few days, just because I think the break is too long. Like, I think a month away is just, you get too settled at home, you feel like you don't really live there anymore. Like, I think they should have shorter breaks, you know, like 3 weeks would be fine. I don't think you need, it was over a month by the time you came back or whatever. And some people actually had a month and a half because they didn't have exams in the first week like I did.
You were dying to get back as well.
Yeah, I was excited to get back because it's like, you can't feel properly at home because you know you're going back. But then when you're at uni, because you're there longer than a month, you can feel like you can properly like get into the swing of things or whatever. And it's also, I like having the structure of it. Like, I like going to my, as much as some of my stuff is incredibly boring at uni, like my lessons and things, it's nice to have stuff to go to and like,
yeah, linguistics.
I like living on my own.
You do linguistics.
So everyone at York, if you do modern languages, has to do, if you do ab initio, which is from scratch.
What's ab initio?
Ab initio. It's Latin for from the start, I think.
Oh, so they call it ab initio, which
ab initio
means ab initio.
Ab initio.
Ab initio,
yeah.
Which means from the start.
I think so, yeah. Well, ab is
so you're
from,
doing Spanish.
Sure. So, yeah, so they offer ab initio Spanish and ab initio Italian, and then you only have to do one linguistics module, and if not, you have to do two linguistics modules. But it's not really related to your course at all, and it's just really boring.
Well, tell me what linguistics is, because so I would have thought it was quite interesting.
So some of it, so linguistics, I think it is like, you do like sociolinguistics and semantics. I think all of that is really interesting, but the one that I do, because you have to do one of these, like, you do one of two, which is either phonology or syntax, which are the like more science, like, groundwork stuff. It's not any of the interesting, like,
so it's the
human
of
things
languages.
It's the science of it, and it's just incredibly boring. It's all about the way that words are formed. So like disinvestment would have like the prefix, the invest, and like when can you add the different parts of the word on or whatever. Then you move on to like sentence structures and how to identify a constituent and stuff. And then what we did most recently was about oh my God, the lecture, I could not tell you what it was on about. It's very complicated as well, and it's quite difficult. And then you do about like adjuncts, which are like
additions to things.
Yeah. So it would be like, Brian gave a book to Sue is the sentence, and then all the adjuncts would be in the garden, after the lecture, during a thunderstorm, a few minutes before the great vowel shift. All of those little things would be adjuncts. But
what's
you
the great vowel shift?
I don't know, that's just what the example sentence was. But then, like, you can't always add an adjunct depending on whether it's a prepositional phrase or a verb phrase, and it just goes into stuff like that. But my problem with it is, yeah, I can understand all that, but I just don't understand why do I need to know that?
Right, so it doesn't relate to French.
Yeah, it doesn't relate to French or Spanish. But then it's also like, why does anyone care whether you can have an adjunct or not? People clearly do. People clearly care a lot, but it doesn't spark anything in me. The only thing that was interesting, he was like, there's no real reason why you can't have an adjunct between arguments and adjuncts and stuff. It's just the way our minds work, which is quite interesting. Like, no one really ever laid out these rules that said that this part of a sentence must be first and this one must be after, and we're not allowed to put two nouns next to each other. That, I mean, that's not a real rule, but, you know, these rules, no one ever actually said that. It's just the way that humans' minds work for no real reason.
That's quite
which
interesting,
is, that's
isn't it?
Interesting. Mm. But,
and eventually, probably the other stuff will be interesting to you, but, and then eventually, I presume, that'll relate to constructing sentences in French and Spanish.
Yeah, I think the idea is just that, like, the more you know about how a language is constructed, the easier it should be to learn one, I think is the idea. But you can choose to keep on doing it next year, but I think I'll probably choose to drop it.
Oh, right, you can drop it if you want.
Yeah, you can stop doing your linguistics next year when you've got a bit more choice about what modules you do. This year is very, like, set in stone modules.
So with all this hard work with your... because you had exams, didn't you, as soon as you got back?
Yes. See, I had two exams. They were both pretty difficult.
Were they? Do you think you've done well in them? Doesn't everybody...
I don't think I've done well in the Spanish at all. Like, the Spanish was just... I was making up words. I'd made up a whole other language, which I'm hoping I get bonus points for. But the French, I think, was... Oh, maybe okay. I don't know. I don't want to say.
No.
Don't like to jinx it.
But I would think in the first year, nobody does that well. Because the first year...
I think you only do really well if you're, like, brilliant.
If you don't spend your time going out a lot. Because you're going out an awful lot, aren't you? You seem to be.
Well, this week, yeah.
This week is Refreshers Week.
This week is Refreshers. Which refreshers.
This is ludicrous.
I was,
so you've had Freshers Week. You're now having Refreshers Week.
This was quite embarrassing this morning. I was waiting for one of my friends to go to my seminar, because I had one today. And it was a Spanish one. And it was getting quite late, you know, close to the time we should have been arriving or whatever, and I see my Spanish teacher, and then she's like, hola. I was like, hola. And then she starts speaking to me, and she's like, oh, what did you do, you know, last night, and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, well, we went out.
In Spanish?
Yeah, in Spanish. I was like, oh, well, we went out because it was this Refreshers Week. And she was like, oh, Refreshers, like, what is that? That's so silly. You are not Freshers anymore.
In Spanish still, yeah. Well, absolutely.
My Spanish was
I'm with her on
but
that.
Refreshers is a thing that they do in the first week of the term after Christmas. So I've been back for 2 weeks, but the first week is exam week, and then the second week is Refreshers or whatever, and you have to buy a ticket. And it's basically just like Freshers where you go out every night again.
So you've done any of that this week?
Well, no, I didn't go out on Sunday. And on Monday we just went to the pub.
A wristband at the moment.
Yeah. Very low budget wristband. So when we did Freshers, it was £12 as well, and, like, often you can't get into the club and you have to pay for the club anyway, and it basically doesn't offer anything else. Before we had, like, little fabric, like, festival bands. This was just a paper thing that someone's written.
And you paid £12 for that. Did you not get anything for your £12? You get a free drink or
you
anything?
You get entry into the places. It's a fiver entry into all the places, so you get that for free.
So how many
and they run other stuff.
To?
Like, I think there was meant to be puppies in the day and stuff, but no
puppies?
One goes to the day stuff.
What's puppies?
Like, guide puppies that were coming in that you could gunstroke, I think.
Right. This is to calm you. This is a mental health thing, isn't it? The
probably. There was other stuff. There was, like, another Freshers Fair, and I don't know, there's some other things going on. Like, there are, like, nice things that they put on and people should go to, but they always sound a bit lame. Do you know what I mean? They're like mixers where they had, like, T-shirts and neon paint, and you could paint it because it was, like, a neon night last night.
It was a neon night last night.
At the club, so it's different for each of the colleges, but for the college that I'm in, it's meant to be that we were all meant to wear neon. I wore, like, quite a bright blue top.
Yeah.
Which, you know.
That's fair enough.
Exactly.
One of the things, before you left home, one of the things you said you were going to do was go vegan this term.
Oh, I didn't do it. No. Didn't do it at all. Didn't. You know what? I didn't even attempt it. Good. I genuinely really thought I was going to do it, but Mum bought me a big block of cheese, and so I ate that. Not just like, I didn't eat like a chocolate bar. I wasn't just like, ah, might as well. But I had that, and then... I'll do fully vegetarian because I won't eat fish. And then I got in drunk and ate fish fingers. So I thought, well, there's no point doing that. So now I'm just back to what I was before, which is pescatarian.
Fair enough, because the thing about, I mean, veganism is very, very good for the planet and all that, and it's just supposedly good for your health and everything. However, if you're not going to really, really take it seriously, it does nothing for the planet. And the reason I know this is I did an interview on Talk Radio with Mike Berners-Lee. The name
related to Tim Berners-Lee.
Well, interesting enough, I did ask him at the end of the interview, and I finished doing this interview with him. Mm. He's at at the University of Lancaster. He's a
lecturer.
He's a researcher there.
Oh, right, okay,
at the
cool.
University of Lancaster. So I spoke to him from the university, and at the end of the interview, I said, "I have to say, you know, you have a very famous surname. Are you any relation?" And he said, "Yes, Tim Berners-Lee is my brother." Yes, he said, "Tim Berners-Lee is my brother." It is a bit of a...
You're always going to be in the shadow, aren't you?
Well, you are if your brother invented the internet.
Yeah, can't really match that.
No, I've always been slightly sort of distant from being always mentioned as my brother's brother, you know, Simon. He didn't invent the internet. He edited The Independent.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
But I'm also, you know... My sister's on TV.
You've got a sister on Sky TV.
So, yeah, my sister's the sports correspondent on Sky News. So, But it's nowhere near invented the internet standards.
Yeah. Fancy that. The problem is with a name like Berners-Lee. Years ago, I was going, and I did pitch it to a publisher at the time, I was going to write a book about brothers because Mick Jagger has a brother called Chris Jagger, who was a pop singer too, and had a couple of singles out, and that was about it. And I was very friendly with the two guys, Chris and Simon Donald, who invented Viz Comic, which was a very big deal way before your time.
No, I've heard of Viz Comic.
Yeah, they invented Viz Comic, which is a big deal. And there was a third brother, you know, who didn't invent the comic. So I was going to write a thing, and I still think it's interesting, having spoken to Mike Berners-Lee. But the point about Mike Berners-Lee, quite away from his famous brother, was that if you don't do veganism very, very carefully, you're not saving the planet at all. He says, if you say, for instance, we're in a cafe and on the menu there was beef consommé, say, right? So it's a beef soup, right, on the menu. And also on the menu there would be asparagus soup. You would assume that you're helping the planet by choosing the asparagus soup.
Yeah.
But that's not true. He says most asparagus has been flown in on a plane, and the likeliest
place
is
sustainable eating is different.
It's from Peru. You know, they fly in asparagus from Peru.
It's also an interesting thing with almond milk, is that people don't eat dairy because they think it's really bad for the environment and stuff, and then have almond milk, but almonds take an incredibly so much water to grow and stuff, so then actually you are just doing the same thing. Like, you have to it's not just about being vegan, I think it's like all the other sustainable elements and stuff. Like, to be fully sustainable you basically have to live off the grid. Like,
well, you have to live on stuff that's produced here for a start.
Stuff that's produced here,
and
probably
not in hothouse conditions.
Yeah, not in big supermarkets. Probably you can't really have anything in packaging. You should be getting like there's one in York actually, like really close to campus, like refill stations where you take in jars and like bags and stuff to get refilled. But like that is really difficult. It's almost a full-time job, really.
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, what he said was, this is about the asparagus flying in from Peru. Humans have not yet learnt how to put a long-haul flight into the air without burning through about 100 tonnes of fossil fuel, producing more than 300 tonnes of carbon. The headline of his research there was, enjoy that fake steak bake, but going vegan won't make you a climate saint.
Yeah.
So you might want to do it for your own good, but you're not necessarily saving the planet by going vegan. So you don't need to bother about that particular pledge.
That particular resolution. No.
Yeah.
That's good. So that takes some pressure off.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to take the pressure off because I know it's high pressure being at university.
Is it high pressure? I'm not sure. it's...
Well, you're clearly not feeling it yet, but it will be.
Oh, it is. Like, and it is pressure. Like, I've got a lot of work to do and stuff. And
yeah, you were saying that over Christmas you had a lot of work to do.
Didn't see me doing that much, though, did you, Dad?
I didn't see you doing that much at all.
I did,
I saw you watching quite a lot of episodes of West Wing.
Yeah.
But I didn't...
I literally had not watched... barely any TV. Like, I really don't watch TV while
that's
I'm at
good.
Uni.
That is definitely
it's really good, yeah.
Because if you're at home, you'd be watching The Voice and The Masked Singer and...
I wouldn't be watching either of those, but...
I thought you liked The Voice.
I'd watch The Voice if I was in with Mum, because Mum likes it, but I wouldn't particularly go to watch The Voice, but lots of other stuff I would watch. Yeah. And I really don't watch very much TV
at
all.
And how, since you've been back at university, you've been out nearly every night?
Yeah, drank a lot of the nights, even if we weren't going out. We went to the pub and, like, drank quite a bit or whatever. But I think it will be just this first week, especially because everyone was getting back. So it would be like, oh, you've just got back, we'll go for a drink, you know, like that kind of thing. I think after the first week, it'll settle down a bit more. But yeah, so this week, we're meant to be doing Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday or something ridiculous. But we'll see whether that happens. But so, the thing is, Dad, you want me to be going out all the time because that's how I get you some good stories.
Well, if
some
you
good
do,
content, you know?
You're
I'm not going to get much content sitting in the library doing my work.
Well, you never know. Things happen in the library. Shall we have a bit of music?
Yes.
I got a tweet from somebody on Talk Radio saying, I hope you're going to introduce Ruthie to the Ruttles. So I will introduce you to the Ruttles.
Sounds like a children's band.
It does, but it's a sort of satirical... I'll tell you what it is. There was a guy called Neil Innes who wrote a lot of the songs for Monty Python. So he was sometimes called the Seventh Python. When I was growing up, he was on a couple of programmes called... well, actually, one on children's television called Do Not Adjust Your Set, very funny show. Another show called Rutland Weekend Television, which was like a spoof of a television station. And he died last week at the age of, very suddenly, at the age of 75. And he formed this band, which started as just a sketch on the show. So it was a sketch about the Beatles. So it was in sort of the very early 70s, taking the mickey of the Beatles, basically. The band was called the Ruttles, because it was on Rutland Weekend Television. But eventually it became a band in its own right. I saw them at the Leeds Irish Centre, and they were all their own songs, but they were all just a slight take on the Beatles. He did the sort of John Lennon voice, and he reckoned that he wasn't ripping off the Beatles, he was just doing John Lennon. But I thought you might have a listen. This is called Double Back Alley, and it was one that that they did as a sort of spoof of the Beatles' Penny Lane. And when you hear the attention to detail, this is just phenomenal. I'd like to play the whole thing. We could just play 20 seconds of it.
And that was John Lennon, then?
Well, it was Neil Innes, who just died, sadly. But a fantastic, I think...
It's a great John Lennon impression.
It is. And well, it's a great impression.
Parody as well, kind of.
Parody of the Beatles. I'll just play 6 seconds of the instrumental break, and then you get...
You can't. There's against the copyright rules.
Well, it's not, because there's a different part of it. Here we go. This is 6 seconds.
I mean, what Beatles song is that?
It's like, Penny Lane.
Yeah.
I mean, how Penny Lane is that?
It's so Penny Lane. More Penny Lane than Penny Lane.
It's more Penny Lane than Penny Lane. I mean, he was brilliant. And as I said, I did get... he died, and it was... For those of us of my age, you know, boomers, etc.
What was the name of the woman who died who wrote September?
She was called something Ellis... Thomas.
Ali Willis.
Ali Willis, that's the one. I knew it was Willis. So go on and ask me again.
What was the name of the woman who wrote September that died?
Ali Ellis, I think.
Ali Willis. Right. Sorry, we've got to tell people. So I asked Dad that question before. He didn't know it. So we were going to Google it and then I was going to ask again. He was going to tell me. And so I just said, right, it's Ali Willis. And then I'll ask now. And then he said Ali Ellis, which is not even a name.
No, it's not. But don't destroy the fourth wall.
I like this. I think, yeah, break the fourth wall.
Yeah, break it. Break it.
Should I have play my music now?
Yes.
Yeah. Mine is a song called Habitual Love by OK Kaya.
Who wants to be loved out of habit? Who wants to be just an idea? I want my love to be magic, no habitual love. No habitual.
Excellent.
There you
Excellent.
Go, that's the song. So, OK Kaya, she's Norwegian born, but I know I've had done like literally
every Scandinavian
singer ever, but I really didn't know she was until I got this song because someone else was on Spotify. You can have friends that you follow and they can play songs and then you can click and see what you can see what they're listening to as they're listening to it. And I saw that someone was listening to this and I just put it on and I was like, oh, I actually really like this song. And it was only when I came to researching it for the podcast that I found out she was Norwegian born. But she's also a New Yorker called Kaya Wilkins. And she's got a couple of albums and another one coming out, I think, really soon. And she's just very good.
Yeah, excellent. I noticed you know, from the stuff you're playing in the car, you're getting into quite a lot of laid back, very chilled.
I was playing
singers,
a lot of like
Katie
not cool
Mellor
stuff this morning.
Dido. Is that just for me?
Yeah, that was
cool
a bit
stuff?
For yeah.
Right.
I'm very into that. I've played Stormzy before, so I didn't want to do it again because I know you like him. But his new album, Heavy as the Head, which came out not so long ago at all, is really brilliant. Mm. So that's what I would also recommend.
Just talk a tiny bit about Meghan Markle and
Prince Harry.
I got pretty fed up with Philip Pullman, especially, who tweeted about the fact that all the attacks on Meghan Markle are racist. And he said,
I think there is an element of
it. And what, he just went over the top because he said, what a foul country this is. I mean, clearly, it's probably still bubbling up over Brexit, I suspect. But I think it's absolute nonsense because.
I disagree. I think there's massively an element of racism to it.
Do you think so?
An element of racism, anti feminist issues, I think, as well, her being married before, her being like more of a
working woman. I didn't even know she was married before.
I'm saying that I don't think you've taken that much
black,
of an
to be honest, until her mum turned up at the wedding, I hadn't realised she was black.
But like a lot of people did know, you're just not that interested in the royals, it's a really bad like metric to measure it against. But a lot of people do know, and I think there is, and there's a sentiment against it in the press massively. Like I've seen they've done a lot of comparison articles where Kate Middleton's doing the exact same thing, and she's not praised for it, but you know it's all that's Kate Middleton, how lovely, or that's nice, or just a factual article. Whereas when it's Meghan Markle, it's a criticism in her character always. And then there's a lot of things that are like, oh, this is what Meghan Markle's done to Harry and stuff. Like, you don't know what their marriage
no,
is.
Nobody
like,
knows any of that. But what I'm saying is I think that Piers Morgan is fairly sound on Meghan Markle and he's getting a lot of heat for it. Well, what he says is nobody dislikes her because she's black.
No, you're wrong.
What about when there was a wedding? There was a huge... Everybody said, brilliant. It's a breath of fresh air for the royal family
I think some people did, but not everyone.
That was the main tenor
no,
of the conversation.
I disagree.
I think we're back to Brexit again. People saying Brexit is all about racism. And
Brexit is partially about racism. There's no getting away from that.
It's about nationalism.
Anti-immigration. And anyway, patriotism has an undertone of racism.
Well, only in that supporting Manchester City has an undertone of not supporting Manchester United. As far as I'm concerned, what he's saying is that people have started to dislike Meghan Markle because of her self-righteousness, because she tells us what to, you know, eco... And it's hypocrisy, isn't it? It's got to be hypocrisy. If you're going across
the
Atlantic on a transatlantic jet on a regular basis and then saying we should all
but
be...
But that's the the whole of the royal family.
Yeah.
No one else is getting the same abuse in like the media and stuff.
Because
that she
Princess
does.
Anne, she may go to Australia on a jet, on a private jet, but she doesn't then turn around and say we ought to all be looking at our carbon footprint.
That's ridiculous.
Well, it's not actually.
You can't ask her not to like use that platform to say climate change is a really big deal.
Well, then she should not be going to Canada.
But it's not just her. Like all of the royal family have said stuff about the environment. I'm sure.
No, Prince Charles has, but he's about the only one. But you know.
But anyway, like the way that the way that people have had a go at her compared to brushing over of so many actually scandalous things, and we've decided that she's now the one we just dislike.
No, I don't think she got away. I mean,
she did, Dad.
No, I don't think she was more because she was new to the royal family, and because Prince Harry is in that strange position of being a spare heir, they call them, you know.
Yeah, no, I know what that's called.
Yeah, he's got no role there. The press focused on them because she's a celeb and she's used to the sort of celebrity lifestyle. And, you know, when she was doing Suits, I suspect that she used the press for her own ends. And now she's seeing the other side of it. Now she doesn't want the publicity. But when she was doing Suits, which she wasn't very good in, incidentally.
Yeah.
I'm
definitely not defending her as an actor. I think she was pretty poor.
Pretty poor. And therefore would have needed the press on her side. And now she's found out that she doesn't like all the attention from the press.
Come on, you're psychoanalysing someone that's the craziness of it, is that you're now thinking that you know how she feels and stuff, and you don't.
No, I have no idea how she feels.
Stop pretending.
No, I'm not pretending. She said how she feels. She said they want to take a step back from the thing. Yes, I'm just saying.
But you're saying, she's on the other side of the press. And
no,
blah, blah, blah.
I'm not. Yeah, well, that's true. But what I'm saying is that Piers, I'm not talking about her at all. You can take three steps back as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, they can all take a step back. But Piers Morgan is getting heat for saying that people don't like her. People think she's hypocritical.
She can be hypocritical, but also subject to racism.
So why does everybody say that Britain is racist? Because people don't like her hypocrisy. Nobody's saying they don't like the fact she's black.
That's why her hypocrisy is picked out. That's why the press favours her. Like, you can see the articles, Dad. Like, literally, there's one about how she ate avocados. There's another one about Kate Middleton and avocado,
yes,
which
I've
is absolutely
that.
Fine. There's one about them holding...
That's all Twitter bollocks.
They're pages from newspapers.
I know.
They were pages from newspapers. They are pages from newspapers.
I know,
like, there's
they're
not
pages from newspapers. But, you know, that's not racism. That is
it,
just
it
the
is,
way...
It's an undertone. It's a subconscious racism. And that's what Britain
not.
Has.
The papers do need villains. At some stage, the papers will, white, black or whatever, at some point...
Yes, but
the papers
that
will decide they don't like some, you know, the
male. But they villainise black people more than they do white people.
No.
No,
absolutely no.
But Britain is racist.
They decide there are certain people they don't like, whether it's Jade Goody. They all attacked Jade, you know, no longer with us, but they all attacked Jade Goody when she was in Big Brother for being racist, if you see what I mean. She was
that's
probably
different.
Before your time.
Yeah, I don't know what this is. But
there are other
But there
villains,
are, yes, yeah, there are, absolutely, that's fine, but... Hers is there's a particular brand of racism which I do think is at play in the Meghan Markle stuff.
No, I'll tell you what I think. It's fair enough that I disagree, but that's fair enough. That's your view. My view is there was a lot of people who got really brassed off about Brexit, and they think England is a racist country. Go and live in France. Go and live in Italy. Those countries are more racist than we are.
One country being racist doesn't make another country not racist. And it's also different. It's a different type of racism.
No, what I'm saying is...
But you can't say, they're more racist than us, so we'll just stay this
what
racist.
What I'm saying is...
Good for us.
There's going to... If we are averagely racist, but not... We're not a hugely racist country. We are not a foul country, which is what Philip Pullman said.
I agree with that, but
there's lots of people on Twitter are saying, and I think it's all a spillover from Brexit, where and don't forget I did vote Remain, but there's a spillover from Brexit where everybody on Twitter said that Brexit supporters were racist, and I don't think that
I think some Brexit supporters were racist. I'm sure some Remainers were also racist, but I think there were racist undertones to the Brexit debate and to the Brexit vote. Not everyone. I'm sure a lot of people do. They studied it, the economics of it. They voted for it because they didn't like the bureaucracy of the EU. There's lots of that, I'm sure. But a massive part of the debate around Brexit was about immigration, and it's hard for immigration debates not to have undertones of racism.
Yes, but some people are concerned about immigration because it's affected them job-wise, affected their communities they live in.
Absolutely.
Which is fair enough. That doesn't make them racist, does it?
No, that doesn't. And that is not at all what I said. I'm saying that there are undercurrents of racism in immigration debates.
Do you disagree with the tone of things like Philip Pullman's tweet to say this
is... Yeah, I think so. I think that is, it's inflammatory, and I believe... most of all in the fact that extreme anything is always the worst way to go, and that is extreme hatred, I think, and those kind of words and that language is particularly powerful. I mean, he's a writer, he's a good one. Like, I just think any of this, like, really extremeness about any of the debates is bad. Like, and that's why the, like, people like Katie Hopkins and Piers Morgan, they're on another end of a scale, and they're also bad. Like, I don't believe that only the people who are vehemently right-wing are the problem. I believe that both ends of that spectrum, when it's intense, is...
Yeah, I mean, the only way I would disagree with you is I would not lump Katie Hopkins in with Piers Morgan. I think Piers Morgan's quite intelligent, quite smart.
Different coats.
I think he knows what he's talking about.
I think they're different. They're different.
I mean, he talks a lot of rubbish as well, but that's part of the programme.
Different monsters.
So, are we saying that Piers Morgan is peak?
Peak. I don't use that word barely ever. You want to know why I don't use that word?
Why? Is it
so last
year?
Because it makes no sense. No, it makes literally no sense.
It's the opposite.
Peak is top, right?
Yeah.
And I had a friend, and she used to use it all the time. Everything was peak. And
if it was bad.
If it was bad, yeah. And I was like, I don't get that word, because peak is the top of the mountain, you know. That's good. That must be the best thing. And
she
was like, no, it's the top of the bottom. And I was like, ah, so it's the... closest to being good, or the, like, it's the top of the bottom, but the bottom is down. Like,
So peak is something that's a bit bad, but not very bad.
No, peak is very, very bad. The worst of the worst.
Well, Brunel University have banned slang words in class. They enforce strict. Yeah, they enforce strict language policies.
That is so stupid.
Yeah, well, Kevin Marr agrees with you. In the Times, writes that that's absolutely peak. He says, "I do not condone the stigmatisation of any pupils, mostly because in a class situation, it's pretty moist." Do you know moist? That word used means embarrassing, apparently. But now, I heard you talking about banging tunes, you were saying, in the NISA at the university campus. They play banging tunes. Apparently, banging is gone now. What you now have is beast. Beast instead of
beast.
Banging. Yeah, this is...
I don't use beast either. I've heard beast, but I don't...
Do you use lush?
I don't really use lush, but it's not really a northern thing.
No. What about peng?
Peng I use.
Yeah. Now, this means cool. I know sick means cool, doesn't it? And so apparently does safe.
Safe, yeah. I'd use safe a lot as well.
There's a little sort of glossary of slang here. Do young people ever say wagwan?
Only, like, road men.
Road men?
Yeah, you know, like, boys who wear, like, joggers and...
Are they called road men?
Joggers and, like, a... what else would they wear? They have the same haircut, like, short back and sides.
Anyway, this guy in the Times has been trying out this slang on his son, and his son said to him, you know, he's been using words like moist and wagwan and bang and beast and lush and things, and his son said to him, "You're not a drug dealer, Dad. Get over yourself."
It's cringy when some people use some of those words, especially like wagwan.
Wagwan.
Don't like that one.
No.
But one of the ones that a lot of the boys used to say, I didn't really say it that much, but it definitely got said a lot, was saying, like...
Well, people say just saying,
don't they? No, but it's different. It was like a greeting, or like a hello, how are you, what are you up to, all in one, like when you first saw someone. So, like, you'd wake up and you'd be like, oh, saying Kellner. Like, hi, you all right, what are you doing?
Oh, saying
Kellner. But I said it, I must have said it like once, and no one had a clue. So I don't know whether that's like a very strictly Leeds thing, or...
Well, you're so
my
Leeds, aren't you? I noticed that you were telling me earlier, your friend, you have this...
Oh, we have this game that's called Psych. Ellen, it's one of the Ellen DeGeneres games. You know, she made that Heads Up game as well.
Oh, does she make games?
Just apps. It's just that one, I think, Heads Up, and then this Psych one. And a lot of them are very like rude and vulgar. Yes. But they basically give you a question. So one of them was, how does Ruth unwind after a long day? And then everyone sends in an anonymous answer, and you each have to select the one that you think is the most funny or the most accurate or whatever. So one of mine was, how does Ruth unwind after a long day? Just thinking about Leeds because it gives her a calming pleasure. It's really funny.
Is it because of your Leeds accent they all think you're...
No, because I just talk about how I think Leeds is the best all the time.
Right. There was a couple of others.
There's a couple of others that were quite funny, yeah. Learning some effing pointless facts and reciting them to her bored friends. I just tell them, like, boring rubbish facts and stuff. Especially about, like, if a word means two different things or whatever. My one yesterday was about tapas.
Yeah.
So the word tapiar means to cover in Spanish, and it's also the root of the word tapas, because tapas came after tapiar to cover, because if you had a beer or a glass of wine at the... it was kind of a lot of different reasons. So at a restaurant or a bar, a tapas bar, they would put a tapas on top of the... They would cover your beer or your wine with the tapas, so that you would have to eat it first, because they were always really salty, so it would make you want to buy more drinks, and because it would avoid the flies getting into your drink as well. So they would sometimes be covered with a little plate and then the thingy on top, or just, if it was like bread or something, just straight on top. And so then you would have to eat it as well, so you didn't get too drunk ever, and it would keep the flies out, and it would be salty, so it encourages people to spend more money, because you would cover your wine, your drink with the tapas.
Were people fascinated when you told them this?
That wasn't one of the worst ones. I've said some real uninteresting things.
Like what?
Pescado is fish in Spanish, but only fish. But then pez or whatever is fish if you don't have the intention to ever eat it.
All right, so a fish that just sort of
a fish that you want to keep as a pet or something.
Is pesh.
But a fish in a river might be pescado, because you can consider eating it.
Right.
And then the two other funny ones that... there's more than this, but some of them I can't read out loud.
No. University has been threatened with fines unless they make it easier for students to report sexual harassment. A report by the Office for Students says that universities must have clear guidance for students who've been abused or assaulted, etc. The office which regulates higher education in England said, we propose focusing on the extent to which a provider, i.e. university, operates robust reporting and complaint handling mechanisms. And I just thought at the time, you've got a bunch of young people all together, all at the sort of age when, you know, you might be sexually active. So it is an environment where you would expect, as a matter of course, a certain amount of sexual harassment.
Yeah, I can't remember what the figure was, but I remember I was having a conversation with one of my friends at uni being like, I wonder how many people do get like sexually assaulted or harassed or whatever at uni. And the figures were unreal, like so high. I think it's just because, and everyone's in close proximity, especially in first year when you're in those halls and you know, and it's all that grey area stuff with, like, when it comes to sexual harassment rather than abuse and things. But I think what they really, really need to do is more stuff about, like, say, practicing safe sex, and more like regular and like 24/7 availability. Like,
so if you were assaulted sort of after a drinking session, say at 12 midnight, what could you do? Would you have to wait for the next day?
Well, no, you could report it, because there's a thing called Nightline which works throughout the night, I think, for reporting it. But then also, if you were, say, like raped or something, one of the things that you'd need to do would be to, like, get the, if you went on a form of birth control, like get the morning after pill and get an STD test and whatever. But there's only in York, I think this is a specifically bad thing with York, the free clinic on campus is only open on a Wednesday, so you can only get assaulted on a Tuesday. Wow. That's the rules. And if not, you would have to go into town and go to Boots, I think, and I'm pretty sure it's £35 for the pill. I feel like I read that somewhere, which is pretty, like, that's pretty expensive. And I think you can order it online maybe as well. But again, like, it's not free. And the nearest...
But you can report straight away on Nightline, I presume.
I think so. But, like, to be able to speak to, like, a medical professional, you wouldn't be able to do that straight away. Because the people who run Nightline, I'm pretty sure, are just students.
Yes, but they would refer you to somebody.
But there would be nowhere open. There would be there's no emergent counsellor available or no emergent like doctor who could tell you about those choices and then talk to you about like options and whatever. There's I don't think there's anyone who's trained specifically in sexual assault, because I think Nightline is for anything.
Oh, so like if Nightline is just like
if you were really
if you get locked out, if you had your phone stolen or something.
If you get locked out, you go to like the reception. That's like a practical thing. Nightline is if you know you're just really sad and you just want someone to chat to. If you've lost all your friends and you're just lonely, like it's for stuff like that. It's not specific. I don't think they're specifically trained in what to do if someone's been assaulted, because I think that probably if you wanted to speak to someone straight away about that who knows what they're talking about, I don't think you could.
Does it concern you? I mean, you should really have something you ought to check up on, you know, if you're going out drinking on a regular basis. I know you're quite good. You don't get senseless, do you?
No, I try not to sometimes, yeah. But I think...
Although you did over Christmas in our house, you went to...
I think I got spiked. I'm sure everyone says this after they get too drunk. I got spiked. I know I do sometimes, and it's probably that should be one of my New Year's resolutions, is not to get absolutely like blackout drunk.
Definitely.
But in terms of like sexual assault, it feels very safe on campus, but then it does happen to so many people. So I think it might be one of those things where
I was going to say, because you said like the figures were unreal. Yeah.
I think maybe it's like doesn't feel like it would happen to you. Do you know what I mean? That kind of thing.
It's dangerous.
But which is not true. Like it can happen to like anyone. But
do you think York then is better? Some universities have a worse culture than New York as regards this.
Yeah, I think... I don't know where's bad.
Yeah, these people are saying there ought to be a tougher line on campus abuse. Do you think they'd look at York and say York's by and large doing
a good
job?
I'm not sure. I think it's... The thing is, the university's not going to, like, advertise those figures regardless of what they are. Do you know what I mean? So I don't know where is worse for it. I'm imagining places like Bristol are quite bad for it, because there's a lot more girls who go to York than boys, I think. Like... Right. Statistics wise, Bristol is more boys, so maybe that affects it.
You can't find a place in the library, apparently.
So we're moving on from sexual abuse. We've solved that. And
yes, let's move on to libraries. Many graduates of UK universities will remember the seasonal scramble for a good spot in the library during exam time. Actually, if you're going to the British Library near St Pancras Station, because I was a member there, and they were absolutely packed during exam
time. It got really, really busy in the first week.
Did it? I was going to ask you about York, because apparently overcrowding at Bristol has reached a whole new level. After years of expansion, the university is so short of study space that places are being offered to study on the SS Great Britain. Now, the SS Great Britain was a great steamship designed by Isambard Kingdom Brunel.
Yeah.
And that's in the docks area. You know, it's a tourist attraction, basically. Mm. And now, it says, the history department tells students needing a place to revise that they can reserve desks during the January exam period on Isambard Kingdom Brunel's famous steamship, and the vessel's kept on a dry dock.
That's so funny.
Yeah, it's bizarre. But I suspect it's a bit busy at York, but it sounds to me... Because you've got a 24-hour library there.
Oh, yeah, every uni's got a 24-hour library.
Really?
I think so, yeah. It is hard to find a spot, like, at particular times of day. If you go early in the morning, you're pretty much safe. Or, like, late at night, you're fine. But if you go in the middle of the day and stuff, it is really hard to find a spot, especially in the, like... Studious Buzz Zone, which is like you can work with people chatting and stuff. That's really hard to find a spot in if you're not careful. And then even the silent zones get full up. You usually can find a place, but I also don't know what it would be like. Like it was an exam week, but it wasn't like the big exam season at the end of the year. So I imagine it does.
Plenty of library space. I mean, obviously,
Bristol, but there could be more tables and stuff.
Now, you've noticed a great gap this week in the podcast.
Emails.
Not a single email. Well, Spotify did offer us some sort of deal. Somebody else selling some internet services got in touch with us. So we had about four, and they were all from commercial concerns. Wanting us to subscribe or pay money for something. So if you do want to send us an email, we'd love to get it, you know, if you're not trying to sell us anything. Even if you are, we can't stop you. It's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
That's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes, it's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
And if you want to listen to the Spotify, the songs in full on Spotify, you can. If you type in Ruthie, Me and My Dad, or Martin and Ruth Podcast, or Ruthie, Uni, Dad and Me, you'll get to the playlist eventually with the songs from this week and all the other weeks.
And hopefully we'll see you again next week.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.